You are now listening to the Calcio Corner podcast with your host, Raffaele.
What's good? This is indeed the Calcio Corner podcast, where we cover all corners of Italian football and more. My name is Raffaele. I thank you for taking the time to listen to this, the 52nd episode of the Calcio Corner podcast. Please be sure to subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, Audioboom, just about anywhere where you can listen to podcasts. Be sure to give me a follow on Twitter. My account is at Italiano Calcio. Check the link in my Twitter bio. That link will have all the links where, again, you can find this podcast and help support my work with it. And we will start off this 52nd episode of the Calcio Corner podcast by talking about Italy's big win over Spain. Italy, the Azzurri, we are headed to the final of Euro 2020. Boy, that feels amazing to say. I apologize if my voice sounds a little hoarse. As you would imagine, I did quite a bit of screaming here. My hands are a different shade of red that I've never seen before from the amount of clapping and hand banging on different things in my house. Unbelievable win. Unbelievable effort by Italy. We took the lead on a beautiful goal by Federico Chiesa. This has certainly been, you know, one of his coming out parties. He's been one of the Italian players that have really stood out and announced themselves on a world stage in this tournament. And when you think about Chiesa, he was the one who wanted to join Juventus, right? He wanted to leave Fiorentina. He wanted to jump onto that big stage with Juve. He wanted to feel that pressure playing at a top level club like Juve, where it's win or it's a failure. And now he's doing that with Italy. This kid is just built for the big moments. He's built to handle the pressure. It doesn't seem to faze him. That sliding, you know, on his knees and then crossing his arms, I tweeted it out. Get used to seeing that picture, because we're going to see a lot of that in that beautiful Azzurri shirt. He's just built for these big moments. He's built to handle the shining lights. The bright lights don't scare Chiesa. Again, he wanted Juve. He wanted to play there. He wanted to feel that pressure. And he handled it well this first season with the Bianconeri. Now he wants that pressure with the Azzurri shirt. He wants to become that leader of this team. He wants to become that big-time goal scorer. And he scored a handful of big goals for us in this tournament. Doesn't seem like any stage is too big for Chiesa. And what a quality that is to have as a player, where it doesn't matter how bright the lights are. You're going to stay calm. You're going to stay confident. And you're going to handle and take care of your business. And then, of course, it had to be Alvaro Morata, the Juventus man, the much maligned striker for Spain, who scored a late equalizer for them on just what was woeful defense by a defensive effort by our side. We played that overtime, those 30 minutes, as conservative and as, you know, traditional, stereotypical Italian as you could. We took a few chances when they presented themselves. We were very content, it seemed like, with going to a penalty shootout. And we ended up emerging victorious. Jorginho, that beautiful, beautiful man, scored what was just the most pathetic-looking penalty ever. If you're that Spanish goalie, you have to be kicking yourself that you let that soft shot in. But I don't care. It went to the back of the net, and we are headed to the final. I'm recording this moments after the final whistle, so I don't know if we're playing England or Denmark. That game will be played tomorrow. I do not care who we play. I've been saying this for a long time now. I said this leading up to the Euro, and I said this after those first two group stage games where we looked impressive and some of the other quote-unquote big teams in the tournament did not really impress me. Throw anybody our way, I will take my chances with this Italy squad 10 out of 10 times. Spain played their game. Spain dominated possession, just as you would imagine. We kind of deviated a little bit from what we've kind of now gotten used to seeing from this Italy side under Mancini, but it did not matter. We still have that DNA in us to sit back, to defend, to put pressure on the opposition when they have the ball, to hit on the counter. That Chiesa goal was built up from the back from Donnarumma, and it was a quick punch. I'm almost at a loss of words. Unbelievable game. Unbelievable effort. It had me at the edge of my seat. Each game in this knockout round, from the Austria game to the Belgian game to this game, has me moving closer and closer to the edge of my seat. I think by the time the final rolls around on Sunday and I'm watching that game, I might not even be on my seat for this game. And it's just, it's unbelievable that they're at this point, and they deserve it. Spain, again, you're going to look at those stats. Spain outpossessed the ball. Spain created more chances. Spain were the more dangerous side, but it does not matter. The only stat you need to look at is the final line, the final score. In this case, the results of the penalty shootout, in which we beat them Locatelli stepped up. He missed that first one. But in my mind, I texted some of my friends and family members. I said, Donnarumma is good to make at least one big save for us. He's that good of a goalie. He's that special. That's why PSG are going to pay him all that money. That's why he is worth all that money. That's why he is the best goalie in the world. And he came up big, made a big save for us. His size certainly is imposing for those, you know, penalty takers on Spain or any team. We won the coin toss, which obviously we were able to pick the penalties to be at the end where all the Italian fans are behind the net. So that maybe played a little role. Certainly pumping up our penalty takers and trying to distract the opposing teams, trying to distract Spain's penalty takers, but an unbelievable game. Again, I don't know what to say. I'm literally recording this about 5 minutes after that game went final. Jorginho sealing it for us. We're headed to the final of Euro to beat Spain. It certainly feels special. This has been a side that's been a team that's been a thorn in our sides for a while now. And I think just for all the Italian players, all the coaches involved, anyone involved with the national team, us fans, the people of Italy, fans here in the United States, or wherever you may be a fan of the Azzurri, I think there's just a lot of pent-up excitement and some frustration for, you know, how messy that World Cup qualification was back in 2018, where we had that low point. It was the lowest point that the Italian team has ever been at, certainly in my lifetime, not qualifying for a World Cup. And the work that Mancini has done in a short amount of time and the transformation he's done with this team to now have us just one win away from winning Euro 2020, it's remarkable. He deserves a boatload of credit. And I know at times he's been criticized in this tournament a little bit by some fans and some of the media with some of, you know, deciding to start Chiesa or deciding to start Berardi or you know, his substitution patterns. But again, at this point, you got to have full confidence. You have to be fully in with Mancini and trust what he's doing. I know there were some people that criticized towards later in the second half when we still had the 1-0 lead, people complaining that, you know, we brought on Toloi, we brought on Pessina, we took Emerson off, but, you know, we're trying to protect the lead there. We had maybe like 20 minutes left or whatever it was when those players came on. We're trying to protect that lead and just keep it at 1-0, maybe hit another counterattack goal and build on the lead, but I have no problem with him taking off a player like Emerson, who's going to push forward more for a more defensive-minded player in Toloi. But then certainly when Morata scores that equalizer, then that's when it throws your plans in a wrench. So it doesn't mean that Mancini's substitution patterns were bad ones. At the time with that 1-0 lead, they were the perfect substitution patterns to make and decisions to make. But once Morata scores that goal and equalizes it, it certainly changes the way you look at those substitutions, but that's not fair to Mancini. So again, full confidence. You kind of feel a little bit for Morata. He missed a critical penalty in that shootout for Spain. He looked like he was maybe going to be the hero for Spain and exercise some of those demons when he scored that equalizer. But then I turned to the people I was watching the game with and I said, Donnarumma is going to save this penalty on Morata. He knows him well from their time together in Serie A. I think Morata has even though he scored that big goal, I still think his confidence, you could just look in his eyes, he's not fully there with his confidence level. The goalie in these penalty shootouts are always playing with house money, in my opinion. The pressure is always on the penalty taker. The goalies, I never really put blame on any goalie when it comes to a penalty shootout. It's just too much of a crapshoot to really put pressure and put blame on them. So I just felt that he was going to miss that penalty and have it saved, and that's what Donnarumma did. So just an unbelievable feeling. Again, we're headed to the final. Chiesa left everything out there on that field, scoring that beautiful goal. You hope he's healthy. He had to come off in overtime. He was holding the back of his leg a little bit. He certainly put in a hell of an effort, and you just hope that he's going to be fully recovered in time for that game. But there's one more game to take down. There's still some magic in this Azzurri team. I have full confidence. I put it out there on Twitter when we headed to overtime. You know, at the end of that 90 minutes, head into those extra 30. I think the morale of a lot of Azzurri fans were kind of down. That was the perception I was getting from Twitter, the reactions I was getting from Twitter, my mentions. And I just tweeted out, don't lose faith. This team has been magical. This team is playing with confidence. There's a sense of belief amongst them. And there should be full confidence from us fans. And now we just have one more game, another 90 minutes, maybe more. We'll see what happens on Sunday. And we could be champions of Euro 2020, which again, when you consider where we came from, failing to qualify for the World Cup in 2018 to where we are today, it's unbelievable. And beating Spain, as I've mentioned, certainly makes it sweet as they've been a thorn in our side. I'm buzzing. I'm at a loss of words. It's an unbelievable feeling. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. I'll certainly put out a podcast a little bit later on this week to preview that Italy game, the final. Again, whether it's against England or Denmark, we'll see. I don't really have a preference. I could care less who wins tomorrow's game and who we play in the final, because again, I'm taking my chances with Italy 10 out of 10 times with this team. This team is as collectively, as together as I've ever seen an Azzurri team. At the end of the game, during the celebrations, Lorenzo Insigne, he puts on a Spinazzola shirt, jersey, and he starts chanting Spinazzola's name, and then the whole team kind of gathers around and they start chanting Spinazzola's name. So it was a beautiful scene there, and just shows, again, how together this team is, how much they love each other, how much they fight and play for each other. There is no jealousy or animosity between any of these players. Locatelli played outstanding in those first two group stage games. Verratti comes back healthy and takes that starting position from Locatelli, but there's no ill feelings from Locatelli. They still have their eyes on that prize and understand that they have to play as a team. Berardi started those first two group stage games. Same thing. Chiesa took his spot. No jealousy, no animosity. Eye is on the team, the group. And that's what's so important about this team, and the confidence and the love for each other and the willingness to fight and sacrifice everything for each other. It's very evident on this team. And again, from Insigne wearing the Spinazzola shirt to, you know, the team chanting Spinazzola's name, like, you just clinch a spot in the final of Euro 2020. You're as excited as you've ever probably been for some of these players in terms of their international career there, you know, with the Azzurri. This is a high point for essentially all these players on this team. And the thing that's popping in their mind is to honor and celebrate with Spinazzola in terms of him watching from home. So to have that on their mind in this, you know, this all-time high moment with their national team career, again, it just speaks to how much of a team this is and the work that Mancini and his staff has done to kind of create this atmosphere around the Azzurri. The love is felt throughout the fans, throughout Italy, the images you see when they show shots in Italy and the fans in the stadium. And from what I've gathered from fans here, you know, back in New York, Azzurri fans, there's obviously a lot of Italians here in New York. It's just unbelievable. And I cannot wait for Sunday. I cannot wait. I don't know if my heart could handle it, but we're going to find out on Sunday. So let's see what happens. All right, so moving on, I wanted to share some thoughts. Maurizio Sarri obviously recently hired as Lazio's coach. He's taken over there this season. He had an interview in Italy and he gave some, you know, pretty good, insightful stuff. And I just wanted to kind of share and digest some of the things he said, because it was certainly making its rounds on social media the other night when this interview was first aired in Italy. And one of the things that he said that really stood out to me was, you know, he wasn't shy to holding back anything. He really was open and taking his shots at, you know, several people, but particularly Juventus. And obviously he was fired after just one season, which he won a Scudetto. And he said, you know, that Scudetto that they won when he was the coach, it was barely celebrated. They felt it within the organization. And even, he said, outside people, whether that was the media, fan base, whatever, he said it was almost expected of them to win. And that it really wasn't celebrated because this is what they were supposed to do. And then he said, meanwhile, this past season, when they just eked in and finished fourth place to qualify for the Champions League, he said, they were celebrating fourth place almost as if they won a Scudetto. So he certainly wasn't shy of taking that shot. And he's kind of right. You know, like, winning in any league, in any sport, in any walk of life should never be taken for granted. I know during that 9-year period of just dominance by Juventus, where they were winning Scudettos left and right, Scudetti, I should say. You know, I know Serie A since that time has gotten a lot stronger. Teams have become more competitive. You know, early on during that run of dominance by Juventus, Atalanta were not a force to be reckoned with. Lazio, the side he's taken over, were not as competitive. Milan were in a very dark place in their club's history. They were not the same competitive level team that they are today. Even Inter, they were still trying to work their ways out and kind of rise back to the top. Napoli had their ups and downs. So certainly, a lot of teams have become more competitive over that 9-year period that Juventus had dominated. Just because they were winning and they were clearly the best team, and sometimes they won with a sizable lead, you know, over the second place team in Serie A, but sometimes it was narrow margins. Napoli gave them a good run a few years ago. Roma made a run one season at them. It shouldn't be taken for granted, though, anytime you win a title of any kind, especially a Scudetto that, you know, marks something that you accomplish over a 38-game season. And, you know, from roughly September through May, it's a long stretch, lots of ups and downs and injuries and things you got to deal with. And last year, or two seasons ago, I should say, obviously they had to deal with the pandemic and the shutdown and the pausing of the season for a little bit and all that uncertainty and craziness. So I think Maurizio Sarri had legitimate gripe to say that, you know, his Scudetto wasn't celebrated and it was kind of almost brushed off as like, we should have won that. It was a foregone conclusion. We would have won. And he was, you know, kind of right to say, hey, look at you a year later after having me as your coach. You ended up celebrating a fourth place finish. Wouldn't you have rather maybe stuck with me and perhaps had a better shot at winning a Scudetto with an experienced coach? Instead, you know, he didn't really take a shot at Pirlo, but he said it's almost not right that these clubs are putting these young coaches at the beginning of their career into these big situations like guiding a team like Juve with the expectations. He said something to the effect that, you know, the Pep Guardiolas are the anomaly in that situation, putting a young coach early in his coaching career at such a big club like Barcelona did with Pep Guardiola. He said that hardly works out. I mean, if you think about what Milan did a couple years ago when they were trying to straighten themselves out, hiring guys like Pippo Inzaghi and Clarence Seedorf, guys just beginning their coaching career, and it didn't pan out at that big club with all that pressure. They turned to Gattuso, although he had a little bit of experience and he did a solid job, but it didn't stick. But, you know, we've seen this where teams try to find that new young coach and turn this player into, you know, a club legend, turn him into a coach at the club. But it's not that easy. Maurizio Sarri says you have to go through your growing pains as a coach. You have to work your way up to those bigger clubs, something that he certainly did. If you look at his, you know, history of the clubs he coached, he really worked his way up to get to the point where he was coaching at Napoli, where he was coaching Chelsea, and where he was coaching at Juve. And I think he certainly has some points. There's going to be some instances where, yes, a young, inexperienced coach takes over at a bigger club and does have success, but it's certainly more of the anomaly and the outliers compared to what usually happens. And I think he was right to take those shots at Juve. Again, it wasn't necessarily a shot at Pirlo. It was more at the club for deciding to move on from him and brush off his Scudetto as if it was nothing. And then he also, you know, he admitted that there was talks between Roma and his agents in terms of maybe him taking over at Roma at different points this past season. Obviously, that didn't materialize. He said he never had discussions himself personally with Roma's ownership or Roma's brass. Obviously, Mourinho ended up going to Roma. And he also, you know, he kind of downplayed that rivalry that's going to be there in Rome between him and Mourinho. He said, you know, it's all about the players on Lazio and Roma. He said, those are the ones who take the field. He said, we don't take the field as coaches. So that's who there's the derby is between. It's not between us coaches. He also said that he was approached by Napoli back in January when there was a lot of talk about them moving on from Gennaro Gattuso. And he said that, you know, they were approaching him, but he just didn't feel like taking over a club in the middle of a season, given that uncertainty and the difficulty certain of taking over a club in the middle of a season when they are struggling a bit. He talked about like the empty stadiums wasn't appealing to him and whatnot. So he just said it wasn't the right fit for him to go back to Napoli at that time. But he also did say that, you know, Napoli, along with his final few months at Chelsea, were his favorite time period of his coaching career. And, you know, he admits he made a mistake leaving Chelsea for Juve. So certainly he's, you know, he's holding no punches back. He certainly has no love lost for Juventus and that organization. And it'll certainly be interesting that first time that, you know, Lazio and Juve square off this upcoming season. And you know, Maurizio Sarri makes his return against his former club, Juve. So that'll be something certainly to pay attention to. So yeah, I just wanted to share some thoughts on those comments that he made recently in that interview in Italy. It certainly, as I said, it made its waves around the Italian media. It made its waves around social media amongst accounts similar to mine that share news regarding Serie A and Italian football. So those were just some of the thoughts on Maurizio Sarri's interview. One final thing I wanted to talk about on this podcast, something also that made its way around social media a couple days ago. So this writer for ESPN, Mark Ogden, he this clip of an article that he wrote about asking him about the Italy-Spain game. He provided a quote, and I'll read it verbatim what he wrote in this ESPN article. He said, I'm going with Italy too to get this fair with a team. I believe he meant to say far. They got to obviously get some better editors there. With Asian defenders in Giorgio Chiellini, Leonardo Bonucci, a midfield without a world-class player, and journeyman forwards in Ciro Immobile and Andrea Belotti is a testament to the remarkable job done by Roberto Mancini. Italy are a team that is far greater than the sum of its parts. So this guy, Mark Ogden, this writer for ESPN, I do not know him, and I usually don't necessarily quote-unquote attack people on this podcast, but for him to say that Italy do not have a world-class player in their midfield, has he been watching any of these Euro games? Has he seen these players play for their respective club teams? Barella, Verratti, Jorginho, all could be classified as world-class players. To say that we have none, I look at all three and say all three are world-class midfield talents. Certainly, Jorginho, the season he's having, people are talking about him perhaps being a candidate for the Ballon d'Or, for the outstanding job he's done with the Italian national team, the work he's done with Chelsea, helping them, you know, playing that critical role in them winning the Champions League. He's a world-class talent in that midfield. Barella has been arguably one of the best midfield talents in the world these past couple seasons at Inter. He's been arguably the best player in Serie A over these past two seasons, regardless of position. And Marco Verratti, I mean, he came back from this long injury. There was a debate over here, Locatelli. He's solidified himself, you know, back in the starting lineup for Italy. And all he's done is balled out in the midfield. All three of those players are world-class talent midfield. So I don't know what this guy's talking about, saying that we're doing it without any world-class talent in our midfield. And then to say that we're doing it with journeyman forwards like Ciro Immobile and Andrea Belotti, he's been with Lazio for a little while now. Belotti has been with Torino for quite some time now. The last thing I would use to classify either of those strikers is journeyman strikers. And even if they are strikers that, you know, have bounced around club to club, that doesn't mean you're a bad player. I mean, last time I checked, Zlatan Ibrahimovic was ping-ponging all around Europe like a ping-pong ball, playing for clubs like Milan. He was at PSG, he was with United. Obviously, he's with Milan right now. I mean, he's bounced around all over the place, but I think, you know, a lot of us would think of him as a world-class talent. Obviously, not necessarily at this point in his career, but just because a player does bounce around from club to club doesn't mean that they're not, you know, a talented player or a special player, and that doesn't make them any less effective on the field. But again, I wouldn't even categorize Immobile or Belotti as journeyman strikers by any stretch of the imagination. I guess the only, you know, accurate thing he said in that statement is that they're doing it with two aging defenders in Giorgio Chiellini and Bonucci. They are getting up there in age. They are, you know, creeping towards closer to 40 than they are 30. And they are still outstanding and doing an amazing job together. And they have such chemistry that just cannot be, you know, matched perhaps by any other center back duo in Europe. Yeah, it was just a weird thing that this guy wrote on ESPN. And, you know, personally, if I were him, I'd be embarrassed to even write something like that. I mean, again, if you're going to write about something, make sure you're knowledgeable about it. Make sure you're not just making things up or just pulling things out of thin air. Again, to say that we have no world-class talent in our midfield is absolutely laughable. Again, I would argue all three players in our starting midfield are world-class talent. But certainly, if you want to debate one or two of them, you would have to come to a consensus that at least one of those players is world-class talent. So it was just a laughable comment by Mark Ogden. And look, I never pretend to act like I know everything about you know, the game, the sport of football, soccer, calcio, whatever you want to call it. I don't even pretend to know everything about calcio. I am by no means this analytic, this tactical guru. I don't pretend to know that I could interpret, you know, tactics and things like that to the level that other people can that cover this sport. I try my best to just get a feel for the game, report on what I see, share my thoughts on what's going on, you know, within the world of football, within the world of calcio. So, you know, I think you guys know that have been listening to this podcast long enough that I do not try to act like I'm some expert at it. And I'm not saying that's what Mark Ogden tried to do, but again, it's just totally laughable to say that Italy have no world-class talent in their midfield. Again, I would say we have three world-class players in our midfield. So just a laughable comment by him. And a silly one, and he certainly was called out by it. The fans of Serie A clubs, the fans of Italian football certainly let him know about it, so nice job by the Calcio community on that one. So that will do it for the 52nd episode of the Calcio Corner podcast. I hope you have enjoyed it. Once again, please be sure to subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, Audioboom, just about anywhere you can get a podcast. Feel free to leave a rating and comment. That would be greatly appreciated to help us grow our content. Be sure to spread the word of the Calcio Corner podcast to any friends, family members that you think would enjoy a Calcio-centric podcast. And until next time, guys, ciao.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Calcio Corner podcast with your host, Raffaele. If you've enjoyed this episode, please rate, review, and subscribe on your preferred podcast listening platform. We really appreciate that effort. Until next time.